Welcome to Do It for the Gram and Enneagram podcast with your host, certified Enneagram coach, Milton Stewart, where we do it for the Enneagram, not Instagram. We make moves to improve our lives and those in our community. Today, we have a very special episode. It's a little different, but just as amazing, if not more amazing. I have the one, the only, Jackson House, one of my best friends on this episode with us. And we're going to talk about something really incredible that we are going to lead coming up later within this year. So I'm excited to share it with you. And we're talking about a pilgrimage. We're talking about transformation. There are some things you cannot get or learn. You have to experience, right? And we're going to lead this trip into Greece that is going to be an inner and outer journey, pilgrimage, a 10-day pilgrimage that's really going to help to transform lives of people who attend. And that's what we want to do. We want to help people be able to be liberated through internal things by understanding how it manifests and connects to our outer world. So this all came about, which is so interesting, by the way, in our type structure, if you don't know. I think everyone knows I'm a, you know, self-pressed 7. Jackson is a sexual 9, So it's a really good combination for sure when we talk about this. So I'm excited to go in. Before we dive in, Jackson, can you speak on kind of how we came to this point? Can you give people just a little bit how we came to this point of like, man, we can lead an amazing transformative trip for people?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like our story as friends goes back way, way into the past to our psychology class that we took together, undergrad.
And yep.
So this is a really cool story of how life happens. I was in a chemistry class, realized I wasn't going to do well, switched out of that into a psychology class, and got put into a group project with Milton. And the project was about disciplining your children, which is just such a funny topic to get to know someone on. Like the first conversation we ever had was like about growing up and how our parents disciplined us. Just a really funny way to start a friendship. And then we actually didn't become super close at that point. We kind of were on our own paths undergrad. But then after I graduated, I moved to Memphis for grad school. And then we got super close. And that's when our Enneagram journey started. And so we were in this group of young adults. And the Enneagram was kind of like a thing we were all figuring out together at that time. And it's been a long journey, but it's been good. I feel like I was identified as a 9 super quick. Like it was just, it was obvious. It was like looking in a mirror when I read about the unhealthy parts of the 9. I really saw a lot of myself in that. But then Enneagram has been critical for my inner work and growth over the years. And then a trip like this comes about again through our experience intersecting. So I lived in Greece for several years working with refugees there. And what was it, 2 or 3 years ago now? Mm-hmm. We had you come over to do an Enneagram workshop with some people that we were working with. So Milton came over to Greece, brought all of his expertise and experience with him, and really walked us through some foundational Enneagram stuff. And then, of course, it's Greece, so we have to look around. We have to have some fun while we're there, too. And I think for me, that time when you were in Greece with us was really when I started thinking about, like, this is something that we should, like, do again, but bring more people into, just because I enjoyed it so much. I found it so transformational just living in Greece, being a part of that history, and then having the inner work of the Enneagram along with that too. So my big insight was I want people to experience what I experienced with these two things.
Man, that time of Greece, I'm so glad you invited me. And it worked out so well. I think that I find the alignment so fascinating because you invited me over at a time I was already going to be in Europe. Like it was already planned. I was like, oh, wow. So I can just tack this on the trip and then be able to like share the Enneagram, like literally internationally in Greece. So I found it amazing that the timing of it, the alignment of it, right? Which I found so fascinating. When I just think about all the things that we've kind of like wandered through our path, our journey, like, man, it's fascinating. Like you said, from psychology class, which I don't know if I remember completely, but it was, we were in agreement about how to kind of like even parent a certain discipline of a child compared to some people in our group.
Yeah.
And it was like,
I just remember being such an interesting group. We had one international student, and then we had a couple of like people from, I forget where they were from, like Tennessee or something.
Yeah.
And our group's kind of all over the place. I think that's why you and I also were drawn to each other then. It's like, okay, we have some common ground.
Most definitely. And something that I know a little while ago, like you kind of recommended a book to me, and kind of through that book, it kind of really connected the way that our like inner journeys and the work we've done in separate places has also somehow, even though those inner working journeys weren't like directly together, we still ended up like doing this inner work and had a transformational experience. So I went to Egypt, as a lot of people on the podcast may know, I went to Egypt and had a transformative journey. Literally this time last year, to be honest, I was coming back to America this time last year from Egypt that has transformed my whole world. Like 20-day trip pilgrimage where it expanded my mind. It liberated a lot of parts of me. And I think it's amazing when you can find that, like, you find that you have a deep divine, deep purpose in this world, but you also feel like super small compared to what's really happened in life, but still significant.
Yeah.
You know, and you also recognize that much of what we've been taught has been skewed, wrong, tainted in a way purposely to make us think or believe a certain way. And so I think all of that was happening when I visited Egypt. And I know you had a similar experience actually in Greece. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the book you're talking about is The Immortality Key. And so that's something I was going to talk about later. Just like that book is a great place to start for thinking about history in a different way, like a specifically Greek ancient history and what's the deeper spirituality behind ancient Greek philosophy, ancient Greek religion. I think especially in the West, we have a really egocentric, ethnocentric view of ancient history, ancient religions, ancient philosophy. The ego of the West, we really think that we're smarter than ancient people. And I just don't think that's the case. I think that they have a lot of wisdom to offer us. And so that's an idea that's been emerging for a long time in my mind. But this book that we read really kind of like put it out there in front of me where I could look at it and be like, okay, yeah, this is worth investigating in a deeper way. And so, yeah, what he talks about in the book is really ancient Greek religion associated with Eleusis, which is a place we're going to visit, and how that place, that religion, ties in to Greek philosophy from Plato on down, but also ties into early Christianity. He goes to the Vatican, looks at art in the Vatican and in Rome. And so there's echoes of ancient Greek religion really throughout Western history. And that made me want to think more deeply about it too. Of, you know, really the Western mind starts with the Enlightenment. And what the Enlightenment did was created a hard boundary between what came before and what came after. And we think that we don't really need anything that came before. but we do. And there's echoes of wisdom that the Enlightenment wasn't able to completely destroy, even though it tried. And there's just wisdom that helps us to live a more holistic, integrated life as people. We're not just physical specimens in a laboratory. We exist in a world with other people that we have to interact with, where we have consciousness, and we still don't, scientifically, we don't know what consciousness is. It's so complex. We have to work on ourselves. Our consciousness is shaped by our environment. Ancient wisdom has a lot to say about these really complex topics that modern science hasn't quite figured out yet.
I think that was one of the biggest things. I totally agree with that. It's one of the biggest things that I got from studying and going to Egypt. It was the consciousness part. It was that even though today's society, we have more technology, we're not smarter at all. we're not even close. And so understanding that their level of consciousness and awareness of what's actually happening within self and the world, it was in awe. It put me in awe. Like I just couldn't, I was like, wow, like this is something else. So it's like supplanting all of these things that were rooted in me from my Western education. And I'm learning things from a much broader lens. So my question to you is, how do you define inner and outer journey? Because this is what we're going to work on when we're there, inner and outer journey. And how does it actually relate to the Greek pilgrimage that we're going to like take people on?
Yeah, our outer journey, it's what we're on all the time. It's the places where we are, it's the people we're around, the things we're doing. And just in my experience personally, when I go to a different place, you tend to see things differently. You tend to see yourself differently. There's a vulnerability that comes with that. There's, especially being in a place where you don't speak the language or people look at you as an outsider, there's a certain like ego fragility that comes with that, that is really a good experience, I think. It's, for me, travel to another place is not about taking, it's not consuming what that place has to offer, but it's offering myself in a way to be shaped, transformed by that experience. And so for the trip, the outer journey will be going to Greece, visiting important places. We can talk more about what those places are, and then doing that with a community of people, the people on the trip, the guides that we'll interact with. So every person that we'll interact with on the trip too has a lot to offer, not just us as facilitators, but the people that choose to go on a trip like this, I think have a lot to offer if they have that hunger, that desire to work on themselves, to experience new things. Those are really awesome people. The guides have a lot to offer, not just knowledge, but insights into a different culture, different way of seeing the world. And so the outer journey is the journey that we take out of ourselves into new places, but also towards new people, new experiences. And then along with that, what happens at a different level of reality is this inner journey. It's really a shame with the tourism industry that you can travel and not be changed, that it's become such a consumer-driven industry.
Speak on it, yeah.
I love traveling. I hate tourism.
Mm.
So the inner journey is how we subjectively as persons experience the things that we're doing. And it's a journey into ourselves. So the outer journey is out of ourselves. Inner journey is deeper into ourselves. And those two things work together. I'm always trying to think about how to conceptualize things like that. And so one category just for me that's helpful is the outer journey is like the religious structure, and the inner journey is like a spiritual reality. And so it's like religion, it often becomes something that it shouldn't be. Religion right. should be a structure that facilitates spiritual transformation, but it often becomes an end in itself, that the religious institutions are only interested in self-perpetuating. And that's what tourism is. Tourism is the outer journey for the sake of itself. It's religion for the sake of religion. But what we're trying to do, the vision that we're developing, is travel for the sake of a deeper inner transformation. And it sounds crazy when we first start talking to people about it, that like we want travel to be spiritually meaningful. We want a deeper, more profound experience to come out of this. And it might be a new way of thinking about travel for a lot of people. But for me, like once I step back and think about it, of course, like this is what I've done accidentally a few times, and it's been so meaningful. It's the really meaningful experiences in travel are the ones that transform you or change you in some ways. Like your Egypt trip, it wasn't meaningful because of looking at the pyramids. It was meaningful because of the experience that you had there.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, man. Like, I love how you said you hate tourism. That was one thing I appreciated about my trip in Egypt, and like was also hard. So two things. One, we got to go in some places where other people weren't at, like tourists weren't at, which was great. So like when we could actually do, not only speak about what actually was going on there, but we could dive deeper into ourselves while we were in that space. And I think there's something so sacred when you can be in a place that has such rich ancient history and wisdom to it and consciousness to it, the people who were there before you, to be in a space and to be able to go inside deeply is, man, just profound. Like, it's crazy what you would experience. And so in Egypt, those moments where it was just our group without all the random tourists, like just snapping pics and moving on to the next thing, were the best moments. Some of the most frustrating moments were those moments where it was like, these people are just here to take pictures of like, oh, that looks nice. Oh, that's cool. That's interesting. That's a wonder of the world. You know, that type of thing. So I absolutely love you saying that, because like the way that we're organizing and aiming for this trip is to travel for transformation, and it shifts everything. Do I remember every fact that I was like, I was taught and everything there in Egypt? No, not at all. Right. But I'll never forget the experiences, and it has changed my life for the better, and it's still changing my life to this day. So I love the fact that you said that, for sure, because this is, man, oh, I'm getting hyped right now, to be honest.
Yeah. Like it's the travel is for the purpose of creating a framework where we can have these experiences together. It's not about learning information about Greece or about ancient history or ancient philosophy. Like we could do that from wherever. We don't need to travel to Greece to learn information. But I think there is a quality of going and being in a place that enables this deeper transformation. Because it's actually putting our bodies physically in a place rather than just thinking about a place intellectually. And that's another Western misconception, that what's really most important is what we think about something abstractly, but the deeper experiences come when we're holistically body, mind, spirit invested in something, in a place, in a person. And even an idea becomes more meaningful when it becomes part of your whole being and not just an abstract thought that you have. So to me, like this trip is an expression of not trying to heal Western culture, because that's like a crazy huge idea, but for the people that come on this trip to try to help us think more deeply about what knowledge is, even how do we live out, how do we embody truth, and spiritually, what does that look like? Because it can, even trips that are historically focused, or it can be still tourism. It can be tourism for the sake of learning, but knowledge should inform consciousness, in my opinion.
Man, I love that. And I think this is where we talk about the experience of people actually having a transformation. In Egypt, there's this, like, I was reading a book and it talked about the experience of awe. There's something amazing about the experience of awe. And when you experience awe, you're literally there. Everything, like you just mentioned, your body, your spirit, your emotions, everything, your mind, everything. The experience of awe has the ability to transform, because it's almost like a paradigm shift is happening now. It's like, you know, so experiencing that was a big part of what has transformed me. Like, so can you speak to, how do I phrase this? I would say the transformation that we're talking about, can you kind of put it in kind of words? Because everybody's transformation is going to be a little different because everybody's on their own journey in different ways. But can you speak to the transformation a little bit that we're talking about? How does a person, what is transformation? How does a person kind of look, or what changes and shifts for them?
Yeah, I think that when we start talking about the trip, it could get really hyped. Like, for me, the purpose of the trip is not to have this like crazy, like ego death experience and to come back like different person, or to have like this like overnight, like mystical revolution in how we see the world, how we think. It's a lot more accessible than that, practical. So a good example is, so one of the places that we'll visit is Plato's Academy. At the time when Plato was there, it was outside of the city. It was in this sacred grove of trees. Now it's in this neighborhood. But the actual site of the academy we can still go to. So we're going to go there, put our feet there on the ground where Plato was, where Aristotle spent 20 years as a student. And for me, as a person that loves history, loves philosophy, being in a place like that creates a sense of awe. Just the idea of, like, we go to college for 4 years, think we're good to go, start working. But Aristotle spent 20 years in this place learning from Plato, learning from the other students. So it wasn't just learning information, it was transformation. And mm-hmm. So that's the kind of stuff that we're going to do. We think Plato was a philosopher in the same way that modern day philosophers are. And that's just not the case. Plato was a philosopher in the ancient sense that religion, spirituality, philosophy, ethics, what we actually do in the world, all those things were integrated. And it was philosophy was a work of the soul more than a work of the mind. Yeah. And even to say that is, I'm betraying my Western way of thinking, because in the ancient world, those were one. So the mind, the body, the soul were all integrated. And Plato was an athlete. He was a wrestler. And so he was like, the body mind thing that we do in the West is just not good. And so part of the experience of putting our bodies in a place is the first step of, wow, like, we're here, where Plato and Aristotle spent 20 years together. We're going to the the temple at Eleusis, like, we're here where the most important people in the Greco-Roman world came to experience this thing that we don't even really understand what it is. And they all said that it was the most important experience of their life. And that was one of the quotes from the book, that the immortality key that stuck with me the most is that the most brilliant, powerful people in the ancient world said that life would be unlivable without this experience, without this at Eleusis. So yeah, to me, so the outer journey is the part of the trip that I'll be taking the lead on. You'll be taking the lead on the inner journey. And so my goal with the outer journey is just kind of like just to set the table for where we'll be, and just to get us in the right headspace of starting to be open to a sense of awe of the mystery of these places. And just historically, we don't have it figured out. We have only scratched the surface of the deep, profound meaning of ancient history, ancient philosophy, ancient religion. And so I just want to get us there. Like you said, like in Egypt, just to be there in places, not to take pictures for Instagram, but to exist, to be. Being is more important than doing. And so even though the outer journey is what we're doing, it's for this deeper purpose.
Yeah. As I'm listening to you, even talking about transformation, and you just like, you ended on exactly what I was like going to say, in a sense. It's like, to me, transformation like is you change the way you be within the world. And so it's a constant changing of how we be in the world, how we see, how we hear, we see, we feel differently in a lot of different ways. And your being is just different. That's the best way I probably could explain transformation, right? Because it can be constant shifts, but it's changing the way we be. So I absolutely love it. Something else you said, and this is the journey. This is the journey we're taking people on, right? So as far as the goal for the inner work on my end, as you set the table, as you get us in the right mind frame, as you introduce wisdom, information, and knowledge that probably typically we would not know, not taught to us, and how to understand in a deeper level of consciousness in the world, in ancient Greece, how they understood the world. My goal is to help us to get to closer to that consciousness within ourselves and figure out what is keeping us from truly living like a deeper conscious life. Because this is exactly like you just got it. And I want you to explain this, because this is the journey we're actually taking people on. This is the journey. Ancient Greeks, many famous, many ones with accolades, many people who actually did a lot to set the structure of how we think and see things today, a lot that we don't know of. But they took this journey that we're going to lead people on. And it was about the deeper consciousness, about the ego, all these different things, so you can truly live life. Can you explain a little bit about this journey that we're taking people on?
Yeah, so there's a quote. I'll just say it in Greek first. An pethanis, prin pethanis, otan tha pethanis, din pethanis. So something like that. It's like, if you die before you die, when you die, you won't die. And that quote, I butchered it a little bit in Greek, but it comes from this monastery in Greece, Mount Athos. And it really speaks to what happened at Eleusis. So it's called the Eleusinian Mysteries. It was an ancient religion that existed for almost 2,000 years, at least. We don't really know exactly how early it existed. We do know that early Christian church, I think 4th century, if I'm remembering correctly, was when the Christians destroyed the temple and the site and stopped the mm-hmm. observance of this. But the whole purpose of this ancient religion was to confront death. And so it was associated with Demeter and Persephone. So Persephone was the daughter of Demeter. Persephone is called the queen of the underworld because she was the wife of Hades, the god of the underworld. And what the ancient Greeks associated the seasons with was Persephone's time that she would spend in the underworld with Hades and the time that she would spend in the world with her mother Demeter and with other humans and gods. So it's like this mythic core, Persephone, Demeter, Hades, on which was built this ancient religion at Eleusis that really took people. The goal of the religion, as best we understand it, was to take people to the underworld, like Persephone, and to bring them back up to life. And we don't know exactly how they did this. We know that it was a pilgrimage from Athens to Eleusis that we're going to retrace. We know that there was like sleep deprivation, probably fasting, mm-hmm. all these bodily practices. And then we also know that there was, another funny thing about the pilgrimage is there was a bridge where people would stand and shout insults at the people, at the pilgrims. So just as the pilgrimage seemed designed to just deconstruct the ego, leading into this temple where the pilgrims would drink this drink called the Kikion, probably psychedelic. And the result of the whole experience was ego death, basically, and learning to die so that they could live. And so this place is like kind of at the core of what we're wanting to do symbolically. We're going to visit this place. We're going to talk about all this stuff. But yeah, really, it's getting to this deeper consciousness of like I said before, the goal of the trip is not to experience ego death, but it's to start to put our egos in check a little bit, just to recognize that in the West, we don't have it all figured out, that we have a lot to learn from the ancients, and to start to use our consciousness for transformation. So one quote that I heard recently was that in the modern world, we've outsourced the management of our consciousness to our phones. And just think, when we're sitting on our phone scrolling through like the infinite scroll thing, what we're really doing is clicking off a certain part of our consciousness, and we're just not really existing in that moment. And so what I want to do is to take back control of my consciousness and use it for good, to change myself, to change the world. And that's what ancient philosophy was. It was deepening your consciousness. It was spiritual, also ethical. All these things were interconnected. And then the other part of the trip is talking about early Christianity and how some of these ideas did exist in early Christianity, and with the spiritual religious tension, eventually the religious structure framework became more important than the spiritual reality. And throughout history, there's been different movements that have tried to revive the spiritual core of Christianity, and those have gone different ways at different times, but there's a few moments like from early Christian writings that I'll point us to that kind of show a similar way of thinking to ancient philosophy.
Do you ever feel stuck, lonely, or discontent in your relationships? If you're nodding yes, then I've got some good news for you. Certified Enneagram Coach Tyler Zack is hosting a virtual summit on March 5th through the 7th for thousands of Enneagram enthusiasts called the Ennea Summit, Love and Relationships. This is your chance to uncover Enneagram secrets that will take all of your relationships to the next level. The best part is you can join us from the comfort of your home or office. If you reserve your free seat today, you'll receive a daily email on March 5th through the 7th with the link to access to 20 renowned Enneagram experts, such as Susan Stabile, Steph Baron Hall, Ashton Whitmore Ober, Gina Gomez, Dayo Ajunuku, and Nian Vong. Join us to discover how your personality shapes all the relationships in your life. We'll talk about how knowing the Enneagram can help you identify your partner's stress triggers, improve communication, enhance emotional and sexual intimacy, heal from an unhealthy ex, gain parenting insights, a lot more fun and exciting topics. So go and RSVP now to secure your free seat for the Ennea Summit coming up on March 5th through the 7th by visiting enneasummit.com. The link is in the show notes. Don't miss out on this amazing opportunity to learn from an amazing cast of speakers who want to be your guide in helping you take all of your relationships to the next level. Man, I think this is what's going to be amazing, the tie-in to it, right? Understanding that we're going to be walking, like you said, we're going to be walking the grounds of like where Plato, where Paul, like all of these massively historical figures who've had extremely great impact on us. We're going to be in places where they did. And not only that, like I said, the ability to like understand the journey, but then also to go inside and work through some of those things as they did in a sense, right? That is like what I, man, am can't wait to do, because the practices that we're going to do, some of them are going to be meditative, someone's going to be somatic, someone's going to be emotional, someone's going to be thought provoking. Like all the, we're hitting all the senses, which all tie into the spiritual, right? Of working with the person. So this is what I'm like, man, super excited for. So along those lines, because we're taking them along that journey, which they'll learn more about, and it's a lot in the Immortality Key book as well, but we're going to share quite a bit about that, especially when we're in the place, so you really understand and feel what's happening there. So one of my other questions that I kind of want to share is more along the lines of maybe what can a person expect, and maybe like what can we do to, like, what helps to maybe overcome some fear that participants may have? And I say that because I remember, like, in my Egypt trip, I didn't have, as a seven, I didn't have a fear of, like, going anywhere. I was too excited to go. Like, I was like, oh, yay. But the biggest shift, one of the biggest shifts for me, for people who know the Enneagram, was my self-preservation instinct, right? I want things to be comfortable as I get out. I want to make sure Milton is okay and I'm fine. And the third day, I realized that wasn't going to work. I was in my hotel room, and I had like, I don't know, not a pity party, but I threw like a baby tantrum, like in my room, like real talk. And I don't know if I've told people this on the podcast, but I had an emotional tantrum in my room because I was really frustrated. I'm in a group of like 10, 15 people, and I can't do self-preservation. Like, I don't even know these people like that. Like, I know one or two, but I don't even know these people like that. And I'm recognizing within myself, like, it's not going to work, bro. Like, if you keep trying to do this, your egoic stuff, it's not going to work. So I threw a little baby tantrum in my room, man. I was crying. I was cussing. I was like throwing stuff. I was mad. Like, I did a bunch of stuff, bro. Like, if somebody had a video camera, it would probably be the funniest, saddest, weirdest thing they've saw in a long time. But Once I came up out of that, cussing, crying, throwing a fit, mad, all kind of shouting, dance, like all kind of stuff, bro. When I came out that hotel room, I had got myself right. You know what I'm saying? And the reason I speak of fear, because I think fear, man, is one of the biggest impediments or obstacles to stopping people from truly being able to experience the transformation we're talking about, but also being able to grow and to live life. That is one thing that, I don't know, a couple of years ago I came across when I recognized how much fear invades different parts of me. And I was like, it's stopping me from living, like truly living life. Not that I don't recognize danger, but there's fear here that is stopping me from doing some of every little thing that actually could change my life. So looking at it from a participant standpoint, what is something that could possibly help a person when it comes to expectations or overcoming or moving through fear on our pilgrimage?
Yeah, I think that you and I are really interesting people to lead this because we think in different ways, like you're self-pres, I'm sexual. And so when I think about a trip, my anxiety comes from the social aspect of the group that's going to be part of the trip, and not necessarily from the comfort and the places where we'll be. So I think you and I together, already we've seen in the planning phases how we're kind of like thinking through this in different ways. And you're like, I don't know, instead of a 4-star, let's stay in a 5-star hotel. And I'm like, as long as we're like, you know, in meaningful connection with each other, that's all that matters. So it's like we're thinking through this differently, which is really good. I think that'll help people have a better experience overall. But on the social side of it, like the people on the trip are the most important part of the trip. The experience that we all have will be determined not by who the people are, but by how they come.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to think through that intentionally also. How can we have some time with people before the trip to build community, build connections, start this process? I think we should start the journey before the journey. And so that would be, if I was thinking about a trip like this, that would be my fear of like, I don't want to go on a trip that's going to have one crazy person that's going to dominate the conversation or dominate the environment with negativity or hostility. And so we want to build in healthy community as part of it. And obviously on a trip, the first couple of days, we're going to be jet lagged. There'll be times where we get tired, get hungry, get thirsty, and we're humans, and so there might be some negativity, but that's something that I want to deal with directly. Try to create an emotionally healthy environment for the trip too, and physically healthy. We'll be walking a lot, but we'll be staying hydrated. It's not going to be so physically taxing that someone can't participate. There's going to be nothing crazy like that, but it will be some walking. There'll be some stuff out in the sun. So just being prepared for things like that. We'll send out packing suggestions, all that. But we're constantly thinking through holistically, how do we lead this trip from keeping people hydrated, having a great gastronomic experience of food that Greece has to offer. To me, that's really important. Some of the best conversations will probably happen around a table. And so that's really important too. But for fear, I think that's a question that people who are doing the inner work already have to explore in themselves and think about what's really at the root of my fear. For you, it might be fearing a loss of control, comfort over your autonomy. For me, the fear would be fearing the presence of other people. And so, yeah, that's a good question. I think everyone, it's hard to answer because everyone has different core fears. Yeah.
This is good. So go ahead.
I was just going to say maybe some of the activities that you lead us through will help us like early on in the trip to start to pinpoint some of those things. And that actually might be a key to the transformational growth, is that in an environment where we might be jet lagged or tired or hungry, we might see our ego more clearly and see, oh, wow, like this is why I'm upset or angry. And like you had this like raw emotional experience and that helped you. Like that turned some things around for you. So maybe we'll have experiences like that too on this trip.
Yeah. That's one of the things about the setting the space, right? That's one thing about being a good facilitator. Anyone in my community of Kaizen understands that the space that is provided, that we co-create, is of utmost importance if we're going to go in and do deep work. And so, like you said, the journey begins before the journey. That's going to be a big part of it. How do we make sure that we're co-creating a safe space for everyone, right? And for us to be humans at the same time and to become restored and come back and say, oh, I went a little bit. My instincts were out of whack, right? So we're going to do all of that. Like that is going to be so important to what we do. And we're going to have space for that. And we're going to set the space for that from the very beginning so that everybody's humanity is honored and we can address things as they come up in a healthy way. And so that's one of the things, I don't know, I feel like I've been divinely gifted with being able to hold and facilitate a space where people can truly come and be themselves so that they can just grow, be seen, be heard, be known, change, be at fault sometimes, you know, without feeling the weight of some catastrophic judgment or being excluded or any of those things. So that is definitely a big part of what will be happening. And that's part of our inner work because we co-create it. We hold it together.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I was going to say too is what people believe, like the beliefs, the ideas that we come with are not as important as coming with an openness and a desire for spiritual growth and transformation. So I mentioned earlier, like the typical Western perspective is we're smarter. We have life figured out in a way that the ancients didn't. And we have that idea because scientifically, in the scientific domain, it's true. We understand the physical world better than the ancients because we have science. And so there can be this Western hubris, and that's how I thought until a few years ago. So if that's your first reaction to talking about ancient religion, ancient philosophy, it's like, that's okay. You can have that perspective and come on the trip as long as you're willing to learn and to grow and just have this like baseline openness, I think is important. And then the other perspective maybe is when we start talking about Christianity or figures like Paul and some of that part of the trip, I completely understand if people are like, why are we talking about that? Like Christianity is this closed-minded religious structure. That's not really where spiritual growth is going to arise from. And that may be true for a lot of people, but for others that come from maybe a Christian background or they grew up Christian, the spiritual growth might come from some of that religious structure. It might be redeemed in a certain way by spiritual transformation. And so just one thing I wanted to mention about Paul that kind of helps me to enter into his thought in a different way is, so just quick recap his conversion story. So in the New Testament, Paul was persecuting the church. He was killing Christians. And then he had this mystical experience, and his conversion from Judaism to Christianity was based on this mystical experience, not based on new information, not based on anything else, this experience. And then after that, he goes to Arabia, to the desert, for 3 years and continues to have spiritual transformation, mystical experience, before he ever talks to another Christian. And so Paul, the most important New Testament author, his religious understanding was based on deep mystical spiritual transformation. So just as a baseline, that's an important place to start. And then he talks in a really interesting way about the self, the ego. And so how he frames it is, I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And so for Paul, that's what Christianity means, that I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And if we translate that a little bit, that's ego death and adopting what I've started calling the Christ ego. The spiritual transformation of Christianity is also ego death and adopting the Christ ego, which Paul talks about in another one of his writings as self-emptying. Who Jesus was someone who emptied himself, humbled himself to death, and then allowed spiritually God to glorify him and lift him up. So there's this whole like self-emptying, divine filling idea in Paul's writings. And so that's that part of the trip will be trying to look at a deeper level of what Paul was talking about too, and some of his letters and dealing with Christianity in that way. So I just wanted to put that out there too, of like where we're coming from with the Christianity, where we're coming from with the ancient history. We understand if people have an emotional response to both of those.
Yeah, we do. Oh, we definitely do. I think that's been a big part of our transformation. And, you know, we could talk about this a whole nother episode type of thing. But our, you know, because you and I both have Christian backgrounds, right? Our experiences that we've had globally have expanded our views on a lot of different things and included more things and enriched our, I would say, it changes the way you even see things. So like what you're talking about, just looking at the words of Paul or what Paul has done, like not reading it the way that the Western world has told and taught us to read certain things, because it is bigger than how it's been skewed to be read. And that was one thing that, you know, in Egypt that I came back with, that was, I was like, God is so much bigger than my little mind has boxed him in. Like, for real, God is so much bigger than the mind I've put God in. Not only bigger, but bigger than even the text that we have to read about God. And I don't just mean the Bible. I mean other ways of wisdom as well out there. I do. And so that experience was like, oh my, right? It's like, I thought I knew so much. It's that thing, you know that you get a little bit wiser when you realize you don't really know much.
Yeah.
And global experiences like the ones we have, it makes me more curious, makes me want to seek more, seek deeper, listen a little bit different, hear things different, what is missing, dive in more, way more than I ever have in my life. And the other part I love about it is allow myself to fall into the mystery and love it and be okay with the mystery that I don't know and I don't have to know, even though I am still seeking. And it's okay. And that's a part of the journey. And so I love how you said like the self-emptying and then the feeling, allowing God to fill us, divinely fill us, to like raise us on a whole different level. I love that because it's going to address that. So anyone who does have those like hangups, like maybe you got Christian trauma, because let's be honest, like folks out here ego abusing like the religion of Christianity for sure. You know, you think about ancient Greek, people have their own opinions and views about some things there, and it may be some misconceptions and all these different things. And so what I love about what we're going to do is help to clarify some of it a little bit more, but help people to do that walk inside of themselves to become more clear, to become more curious, and to maybe understand things in a new way or see things in a new way that expands the way that they live, operate, and be.
Yeah, like Western culture, science, it's given us such control over reality at a certain level with natural resources, our, you know, how rich we are in the West. That came out of this worldview of, oh, we can actually control and manipulate the environment. We're really smart, all this stuff. But the ancient wisdom, the Bible included in this, is not for the purpose of controlling the world. It's more for controlling ourselves. And an example, consciousness is the gift of God. And when we think about it, like the voice inside of our head, when we want to do something, why is there a voice in our head that says, you shouldn't do this? This is not good. Maybe it's shaped by a society, but there's a universal human capacity for self-correction, for correcting the ego. This is what Freud talked about. The id is our desires. The superego is this voice that's always correcting us, giving us this, it's like an image of an ideal version of self that we're striving for that corrects us when we're not getting that. So why does that exist? And I think part of that is the spiritual reality that every person lives in, whether they know it or not. And the journey to deeper consciousness is embracing that spiritual part of who we are as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And not figuring out what that does for us, but figuring out where we are on the journey and always going deeper into a spiritual reality. And that happens in all kinds of ways. The Enneagram is a great tool on that journey because it helps us to see ourselves in different ways. It helps us to see who we are in a deeper way. And then getting in uncomfortable, unfamiliar places, looking at history, looking at religion, that's part of the journey too. But I'm just excited for how all this comes together. And like, I want to go on this trip tomorrow.
I know. Listen, and this was like, I sent you this video. So I sent Jackson this video about like, you know, like frequencies, like they connect to other frequencies, and it don't even have to touch to a degree. Like you can make a certain frequency of a sound, and whatever is aligned with that, it will vibrate and reverberate as well. And it's so fascinating because you would finish something I'm about to say, I'm like, oh, that's perfect. He just segued me straight into it, didn't even know it. In typical Seven manner, I gave Jackson questions for this we were going to do, and then I totally averted it as we started speaking. So shout out to Jackson, bro, because you were just rolling. He's like, all right, we'll just go right, we'll go with this road. But something you said about understanding the spiritual components of it, like the divineness of it. So our Enneagram types, like bringing it back here, because that's going to be a big component of the work that we do, the inner work. It's so powerful because our Enneagram types have a divine purpose unlocked in it on our journeys. And this is why it's so important when we start to understand and unlock what's inside of us, right? So as we're doing this, understanding those higher levels, holy ideas, virtues that we actually bring and operate in and that we have a deeper, rich connection to, all of that is connected to our divine purpose. And that's what I love about being able to work with trips and go on trips like this and pilgrimages, transformational traveling, right? Because I actually get to work with people at like to look at and to work with the higher levels of the Enneagram. When I'm working with an organization, you don't necessarily get to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But when we go and travel on trips together and we get to have these great experiences, these conversations, these moments of awe, you really get to say, okay, let's look at it from a much higher level. How is this calling to your life and how it is interwoven into what you're going to give to the world? And also how you're going to liberate and help transform within yourself through the inner work you're going to do. So I love this. And I'm so excited. Like you said, I could go tomorrow.
Yeah. And like every person that comes on this trip, like both of us, every single person is a unique gift to the world. You have unique experiences that I will never have, I can never have, and I have experiences that you don't have. We have, our lives are so unique, and Enneagram gets to that. Like, what is my unique place in the world? How am I as an individual, a person, offering something that no one else can possibly offer at any level? Mm-hmm. And so the people that come on the trip, we want to help you be you in a deeper way. And that's the journey that we're on. And I want to go on the trip for the same reason. I want to learn more about myself, learn how to be me in a deeper way, and to continue to work in my environment. Because that's the other aspect of humans that are unique. Every human exists at the center of their world, and they are connected in a way that no one else is connected. So your network, your social network in the real sense, not the apps that we use, but your family, your community. We exist in all these networks, and we experience life as the center of our world, for better or for worse. And so what we want is to have just maybe moments of learning how to step outside and seeing how we do fit in a larger picture, larger social context, but also to go deeper into that and think, how would I be able to transform my environment if I'm also deeply transformed? So that's the part that I'm excited about, because in our relationship, our friendship gets better the deeper that we're going into ourselves and that we're sharing that journey with each other. If I was just living an egocentric life and you were living an egocentric life, we wouldn't be close friends. But because we are pursuing spiritual transformation, trying to experience a deeper way of living, that makes us closer. And so I hope that the people that come on this trip experience part of that too, that they experience deep connections with us, with other people on the trip, and that it's not just a one and done kind of thing, but it's relationships that we can continue to grow, challenge each other to deeper spiritual transformation over the long run, not just for these 10 days or whatever that we're actually on the ground there.
Yes, bro, you just crushed it. I'm not even going to add anything to that because you just crushed it. Like, I love everything you said. I was like, yep. Lifelong friends, man, for real. That's what you make on experiences like this. So I'm going to wrap this episode up because you ended it so well there. Those who are interested, if you go to odyssey2024.simvali.com, you can sign up and get on either the waiting list, or you can get on to be able to sign up and just apply, and or you can reach out to us about the actual trip if you have questions or anything like that. There's a bunch of information online. This will be in the show notes of this episode, so please click on it and check it out, learn more, sign up, because we would love to have you. So I'm super excited about this trip we have coming up. It's going to be amazing, no doubt about it. And we're looking for people who are truly like looking to be different, you know, not different, but to be in the world differently and willing to do that on this trip. So I'm excited for that. So check out the show notes. I'll see you on the next episode. And for those who are interested in coming on a trip, you will get to know Jackson and I much better. We're going to have the journey before the journey to really dive in. And Jackson, I'm just so happy to have you on, bro. This is so good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Man, this is so good. So
this is like conversations that we have all the time. We're having them on the podcast.
I know, man. It's so good. So good. All right. So I'm just going to wrap it up because I could talk for another hour for you with you, bro. All right. So check out the show notes. Anything else, please reach out to us. So glad to see you. Have a wonderful day. Remember, do it for the gram, the Enneagram. Do your inner work. Take a deep breath, make a better choice, and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.